Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We are thankful for you listening in today. We always take just a moment and invite you, if you are in the listening area, we would love for you to come by and visit with us at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. We are located at 1128 Baird's Creek Road. That is 1 mile at Baird's Creek Road, just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And we have Sunday school every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. for all ages. Then our Sunday morning worship service is at 11 a.m. And you can find out more about us on our church website, which has archives of all of our radio broadcasts and our Sunday morning sermons and our Wednesday night Bible study. But that is at mountlebanonbc.org. That's mtlebanonbc.org. And it's good to have Noah in here with us today. He always tries to help us out on the radio and does a lot of work behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize, but we sure appreciate everything he does. And how's your day so far?
It's going well today. And we do want to say welcome to all those listening in, our listeners, right here on AM 1450 WATA and 96.5 FM out of Boone, North Carolina. Our listeners on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and those on 89.1 FM The Truth out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate, once again, all of our listeners, and we have been studying. If you are new to the radio broadcast, I know that we have the FM station out of WATA now, and so we may have some listeners that we picked up there. We certainly hope so. And then also 89.1 FM The Truth in South Dakota, they had a power increase, and so they're reaching more people than they have been. And so we want to welcome any of those that are listening in for the first time or maybe the first few times. But we've been studying for many weeks now, 19 weeks, on the subject of education, and we've covered a whole lot of ground. I'm looking for a place to sort of really wrap all of it up. And I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but we're not all the way there yet. But we've been looking at the time period between the 18th century, education in the 18th century, and the 20th century. And the 19th century is a very pivotal time period in our country. The 1800s, we've already covered several things that are contributors to things being so much different now than they were at our founding. And some of those things that we've covered, we talked about John Dewey. John Dewey is called the father of progressive education. With John Dewey, we have the introduction of humanism. And education goes in our country from being God-centered to being man-centered. And humanism is not anything that's new. It's something that's been around for thousands of years, and it's described in the Bible like this, that even the children of Israel in the book of Isaiah said that they worshiped the work of their own hands. And so they discounted the Lord, and they said everything is, we're basically our own maker. We're our own creator. We are our own God unto ourselves. And so we see that education has gone from being God-centered to being man-centered, from being home-controlled to being state-controlled. During that same time period, we have the introduction of psychology, psychoanalysis, all of this that is very much a part of education today. But the introduction of Freud and some of the different ones, and it just caused the education of children to be entered in upon much differently. Socialism, globalism, the emphasis from being a good civic patriotic citizen to being a world global citizen, from being having allegiance to your country to having allegiance to the countries of the world. We have the introduction of a lot of things. We have the introduction of evolution, which I have not talked about in great detail as of yet, but we have Darwin. We have a great influence there. That's probably one of the number one reasons, the introduction of the teaching of evolution into our schools, why we have such a different society and outlook on just about everything. If you go from believing that God created and made you a special creation and you are answerable to Him, if not in this life, then in the life to come, from believing in that to believing that we are a galactic accident and we are here as the result of the explosion of nothing, which created something, and here we are, and we're just a cosmic accident of some kind. No God, no morality. You talk about a difference of worldview. And so the introduction of evolution, the teaching, the theory of evolution into our school system has made a huge difference on our whole of society, the family, the home, school, how we react to authority, morality, right and wrong, the introduction of evolution. And we will probably get to that in great detail before we get done. But we talked about a lot of those things. We talked about this gentleman named Horace Mann in the beginning of the early 1800s. He's called the father of the modern factory schools. And it was during his lifetime. He was a Massachusetts legislator and an educator. And it was during his lifetime that the first compulsory education laws were passed. Up to that point in America, going to school was voluntary. But after then, it became mandatory. It became a law that you go to school. And of course, we see the state becoming more and more involved. And then we see also the introduction of the Prussian model of school system. The Prussian model was brought to America. And the Prussian model was based on producing a citizen for the state, not for the benefit of the child. And so the Prussian model was designed to deliver compliant material to the state. And that is exactly what our school system does today. So we've talked a little bit about those things. We've talked a little bit about the role of religion in education in the 1800s. Those who study church history, I come across this recently, the 1800s, one of my church history books was called The 100-Year War for Souls. And so during the 1800s, you have the rise of infidels. Now, in the 1800s, to be an infidel, and some people wore the badge proudly that they were an infidel, that means an unbeliever. They rejected the Bible, the God of the Bible, the atonement of Jesus Christ, the personality of Jesus Christ, the deity of Jesus Christ, and on and on and on we go. And they were some people, and especially in colleges and universities, were proud of their being infidels. And we have the rise of that in the 1800s. You had the rise of many divisions. You had in Christianity. What I mean by that, you had the rise of many what we might call unorthodox groups, cults. A lot of the cults sprang up in the 1800s. And so there's a lot of negative things goes on in the 1800s. There's also a lot of positive things that goes on in the 1800s. So I could see where it's called a 100-year war for souls, because on the positive side, there were great revivals in our country during the 1800s, the early 1800s, even during the Civil War. There was a great revival that went on. There was a unprecedented church growth among all denominations that preached and believed the Bible. not just the Baptists, but the Methodists grew. The Presbyterians grew. A lot of them, they just were growing by leaps and bounds. Church growth, missions outreach, and what we want to get to today, the establishment of colleges and universities. Christian people pioneered the educational system in America. I took that as a direct quote from a church history book. Christian people pioneered the educational system in America. We have talked about that in a great detail. I'm not the only one that's ever come to that conclusion. Many others have as well. Now, early on, the universities were established by Christian people. Their primary purpose, their first purpose, was to train ministers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The first universities were created to train preachers, pastors, and their affiliation was Protestant. We're talking about Protestant universities. Well, that being a Protestant university to train ministers, that tied them to two doctrinal errors. And these two doctrinal errors actually gave birth to a multitude of non-Protestant universities in our country. The two doctrinal errors that were prevalent in the early universities were, number one, their adherence to infant baptism. And early on in our country, that was law. It was the law of the land in many of the colonies because they were state church systems, Anglican, Congregational, Presbyterian. When the Puritans came over, they believed in infant baptism. And so that was one doctrinal error. The other was that they supported the church state establishment. And so they were for a state church. And the early colonies, and I've went over this many, many times, they had a state church system. But this was a time period in our country when the sentiment of the whole country was turned into Baptist principles and Baptist ideas. There is a historical reason why the largest denomination in America is the Baptist people. By the time you get the Southern Baptists and all the other Baptists, they outnumber all the other denominations. Well, how come? Well, there's a reason, a historical reason for that. There is a reason why, and this is a very common term, but we talk about the Bible Belt. There's a reason why the Bible Belt is full of Baptist churches. Because of the early influence of the Baptist people in this country. Now, we've covered the Protestant schools and universities and their founding. I'll just quickly go over them and their affiliation. Again, the first university in this country was Harvard, 1636. Harvard was Congregational. Then many years after that, in 1693, there was William and Mary. William and Mary was Anglican. Anglican is Church of England, or today in our country, the Episcopalians. Episcopalian, Anglican, Church of England. That's all the same strain. In 1701, Yale was founded. That's a congregational, or was founded as a congregational school, a school to train ministers to go out and preach the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. In 1746, you had the College of New Jersey. The College of New Jersey became Princeton. Princeton Theological Seminary. That's a Presbyterian school. In 1754, you had King's College. King's College became Columbia. It was non-sectarian. In 1766, you had Queen's College, which became Rutgers. Rutgers was Dutch Reformed. We don't have in the South a lot of Dutch Reformed churches, but if you are familiar with The Hiding Place, the book The Hiding Place, and Corrie ten Boom, Corrie ten Boom was raised in Holland, Dutch Reformed. And so there's a school that the Dutch Reformed started. In 1769, Dartmouth was started. That was founded to train Indian preachers, native Indians that were reached by early missionaries and evangelized. And when they showed a interest in the gospel, they would take them to Dartmouth and they would train them to be preachers, and that was a congregational as well. Now, there was one Baptist university in the colonies, in the Americas, in the 1700s. That was in 1764. It was Rhode Island College, which later became Brown University. Now, Rhode Island is the only colony and one of the first colonies, but that had complete religious freedom. Well, let me take that back. Rhode Island and Pennsylvania. William Penn founded Pennsylvania, and he was a Quaker. And in Pennsylvania, they had religious freedom. In Rhode Island first, though, they had complete religious freedom. Rhode Island was founded by the Baptists, by the way. And so, of course, they were for religious freedom. And they said anybody that comes to Rhode Island, they can worship God, and the state is not going to interfere with them. They can baptize their infants or not baptize their infants. They can be a Jew, they can be a Baptist, they can be a Protestant, but we're not going to use the law to enforce the Ten Commandments. And so Rhode Island was established by the Baptists. Now, in the other colonies, it was illegal to be a Baptist. It was illegal to preach the gospel. It was illegal to start churches in the colonies before the American Revolution. So all those years, if you'd have been a Baptist, you'd have had to have been one illegally. If you had preached, if you'd went to somebody's house to have a Bible study, you'd have done that as a criminal, that you were breaking the law in doing that. Here's from a history book. In 1774, according to Howenson, the Baptist increased on every side. 1774, 2 years before the Declaration of Independence. Mr. Howenson said the Baptist increased on every side. If one preacher was imprisoned, and there were a great many that were put in prison, by the way, if one preacher was imprisoned, 10 arose to take his place. If one congregation was dispersed, a larger assembled on the next opportunity. The influence of the denomination was strong among the common people and was beginning to be felt in high places. In two points, they were distinguished, first, in their love of freedom, and secondly, in their hatred of the church establishment. The church establishment being the state church, because the state church was the one that was arresting them for preaching the gospel, putting them in prison, confiscating their land and selling their property, and sometimes beating them physically, fining them, and making life just as hard on them as they could. So they loved freedom and they hated the church establishment. And if you're thankful today for the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment and freedom of religion, Congress shall make no law respecting any establishment of religion, you can thank the Baptist people for that. They were the ones that fought so hard to have that put into our Bill of Rights that we have and enjoy today. So William Cathcart said that. He's a church historian. Now, if you doubt the influence of the Baptist people, if you doubt the growth of the Baptist churches and the Baptist people during that time period, listen to this list of colleges from the 1800s that were started by Baptist people and for the preaching, for the training of pastors to preach the gospel. This is a partial list. I won't have time to go through the whole list, but this is a list compiled by William Cathcart in 1881. And he lists these universities as being Baptists. There's Brown in Rhode Island. We've already talked about that, 1764. And then we don't have another one until after the American Revolution, after the War of 1812. In 1819, we have Madison University in Hamilton, New York. And then in 1820, we have Colby University in Waterville, Maine. Then we have Columbian University in Washington, D.C. in 1821. We have Shurtleff College in Alton, Illinois, 1827. We have Georgetown College in Georgetown, Kentucky in 1829. I know if you are a fan of basketball, you've heard of Georgetown. Well, Georgetown was a Baptist university, college. Then you have Denison University in Granville, Ohio, 1831. Richmond College in Richmond, Virginia in 1832. Franklin College in Franklin, Indiana in 1834. You see all these colleges springing up in the early 1800s to train Baptist people. The Baptists could not send their ministers to Yale. They would be taught in infant baptism in a state church setting. And besides, by then, Harvard and Yale had already apostatized from the Orthodox faith. They'd already gone off into Unitarianism, saying that everybody is going to heaven, whether they acknowledge the gospel or not. So the Baptists were left with no choice. Hey, if we want to educate our preachers, we've got to do it ourselves. Here's one most of our listeners have heard of, Wake Forest University. Wake Forest was established as a Baptist university, and probably most of our listeners know that. Some may not, because since then, all ties have been broken with the Baptist. But George Washington Paschal, he was a professor at Wake Forest. He was one of the historians, and he wrote about Wake Forest in the 1940s. Listen what he said about Wake Forest University. He said, or Wake Forest College at the time. Wake Forest College is a religious, a Christian, a denominational, and primarily a Baptist institution, established and maintained by the Baptists of North Carolina with the purpose of promoting the progress and acceptance throughout the world of the religion of the New Testament, its principles and ideas, and in particular to give its students such education and training as will best enable them to aid in the accomplishment of this purpose. And so you take that and you compare that. I don't know if you could find a university anywhere today, except maybe a university that was specifically, exclusively a Christian university. But I'll tell you, any of these that were founded on Baptist principles, supported by Baptist people, the ties have been cut a long time ago, and you wouldn't find something so specific as to this is why the college was established and this is what we're supposed to do. I mean, can you imagine saying about any college today, this is a religious, a Christian, a denominational, and primarily a Baptist institution? But he talks about why Wake Forest University was established. For the purpose of promoting the progress and acceptance throughout the world of the religion of the New Testament, its principles and idea, and in particular to give its students such education and training as will best enable them to aid in the accomplishment of this purpose. And so he's talking about the purpose of the college there. And I can't remember exactly when the Baptists cut their ties with Wake Forest, but it was more recent than ancient. Today, about all that's left is the demon deacons. You know, that's their name or their mascot or whatever it is. But there's the reference there to the demons and or the deacons. And but as far as any of the rest of this, I don't believe you'll find that on the campus of Wake Forest. What happened? What happened in our country to all these colleges? Now, I have 20 others. I'm not going to take the time to go through them. 20 other, at least, colleges were started during that time period from 1838 to 1874. 1838, Mercer. The last one that's mentioned by William Cathcart in 1881 was Southwestern Baptist College. That's in Jackson, Tennessee. But some of the names that you just might be familiar with, there's Baylor. Most people are familiar with Baylor University. I don't know why we get on our on our TV, Baylor, it seems like Baylor is playing all the time. I think it has something to do with the Southwest Sports Network or something, but Baylor was established and a huge influence once upon a time in our country. Mississippi, Furman, the University of Chicago, LaGrange, Waco, Texas, Vassar, California, all these. Plus, from 1819 to 1868, there were eight theological institutes that were started by the Baptists to train Baptist ministers. And so we look at education today, and we recognize so many of these schools that I've mentioned. But today they have no ties whatsoever, or very little ties, and they would not be recognized as being a Christian or even established as a Christian university. What happened to all these colleges? And when we think about every one of these Baptist universities, do you know they were started not only by Christian people, but they were started by churches? Mercer, Baylor, Wake Forest, many of these other schools, they were started by Baptist associations, churches that came together and said, we need a college to train our people. What in the world happened to all these colleges founded by all these churches, taught by Christian professors, Christian teachers? On and on we go. And here's an interesting thing. Out of these colleges came many other colleges. Let me just give a little quick example of what I'm talking about. When we talk about Wake Forest. Now, we live in Boone, North Carolina. And, of course, if you know anything about Boone, you'd think about Appalachian State University. Appalachian State University was started as a teacher's college because there was a great need in the mountains for schools and teachers. And there were schools and teachers, but there was a great need. And there was two men that had a vision to establish not only schools to educate our young people, but a college to train teachers. And that is where Appalachian State University came from. I believe 1899, 1900, right around in there, you have the very beginnings of Appalachian State University. But the two men that I'm talking about, they're called the Daugherty Brothers. And even maybe some of our listeners would be in some way related to them. We're talking about local history now. D.D. and B.B. Daugherty. And you can go right up here on the Appalachian State University and you can find a statue of Mr. Daugherty. One, his name was Bland, and the other, Doff. And I'm reading a book right now called Mountain Educators. And it's very interesting. I believe from everything I've read that these men were good Christian men. They both attended Wake Forest in the late 1800s. Now, George Paschal wrote in the 1940s that Wake Forest was a Christian college, primarily Baptist, for the purpose of teaching the gospel and reaching the world. And that was the purpose. These men were trained at Wake Forest. That's where they went to school, came back, started ASU. So you have the fruit of these colleges during that time period. But what has happened? This is what we're leading up to as we get into this next week, what I'm going to pick up with next week. What happened to all these colleges? And to answer that question, because it's not always been like it is now. And I'll tell you, like it is now is a far, far cry away from where it was once upon a time. Well, we'll not get into that. We'll not spill the beans. But I hope you'll be able to listen in next week. And I do appreciate all of our listeners. The greatest question of all, we've talked a lot about the gospel and the Lord Jesus Christ, is have you ever done anything with Him? Have you ever accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as your Savior? That's the most important question in the whole wide world. Well, we see our time is quickly coming gone today. Thank you for listening. Noah's going to come and give our contact information.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church that's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828 828- 963-4596, or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org.